Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Michigan Mobile Musings, a weekly broadcast from the Mobile Technology Association of Michigan, hosted by Melissa Burney. Today we're joined by Ken Morse, Managing Partner of Ilium Software. Ilium Software has been designing and creating information management tools for mobile devices since 1997. While the technology has changed, the need for easy and useful ways to manage information on the go has not. If anything, it's become more complex. Ken is here to help us learn more about mobile software, balancing security, convenience, and consumer privacy. Ken, welcome, and thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you, Melissa. Thank you for having me on your show.
Oh, you're very welcome. I'd like to start with having you tell us a bit about your personal background. For example, how long have you been personally involved with mobile software development here in Michigan, and how did you come to be involved in the field, that sort of thing?
Sure. Well, I've been involved with mobile devices since the late 1990s when I worked for an executive information systems company in Ann Arbor. And at that time, I was looking at it. That was a pretty mobile devices were pretty young at that point, and I was very interested in how they could be used to present executive information system or EIS information in real time in a more convenient format than computers or even laptops, which weren't all that portable at the time. And around that same time, Microsoft in 1997 or so came out with a mobile operating system called Windows CE and a new mobile form factor referred to as the handheld PC. And at that time, I took the opportunity to move over to Ilium Software and focus exclusively on mobile applications.
How exciting. I kind of remember those days.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about your firm, Ilium Software. Can you share with us a bit about the firm, the work it does, and the products you offer?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Ilium Software has been around for more than 18 years now. And our main focus has always been around productivity applications for mobile devices and computers as well. Two examples of the kind of applications we do are our List Pro, which is a reusable list manager. When I say reusable, that's the kind of list that, unlike a to-do list where you check an item off and it goes away, reusable tends to stick around, like, for example, a trip packing list or an airline checklist that a pilot would want to do before flying his plane. They want to go through the same sequence of steps every time. So List Pro has been around with quite a few people using it since 1999. And then the other application, and probably the one we talk more about today, is a product called eWallet that's been around since 1997 on different platforms. And eWallet is a digital repository for all your personal and business private data that you want to have easy access to, but you don't want it to fall into the wrong hands. So, for example, your bank account numbers and your credit card numbers and your PINs and your web password login IDs, usernames and passwords, all that kind of information can be stored in eWallet, accessed with one password that only you know, and then eWallet kind of keeps track of all the rest of the information for you.
Excellent. Does it store passwords and things like that too?
Yeah, probably the biggest thing people use it for, although it stores all kinds of information, the biggest thing people use eWallet for is to store and actually create all their web and other passwords.
Okay. I was going to say, I think that this is ringing a bell from one of the apps that I use on my iTouch.
Yes.
I consistently seem to get a ad for eWallet. And it's like, wow, you're that person. Cool.
Yeah, no, Ewald's been, well, it's over 18 years old now, like our company, and it's been very popular over the years. It's been included in a lot of different devices, and people find it very useful. It's just we have too much to remember these days to personally or manually keep track of all the passwords we need to have, so Ewald comes in very handy.
Oh, that's very true on a number of fronts. So you kind of alluded to this a little bit earlier in our conversation. So I understand that you have some expertise that you can share with us on the evolution of mobile devices. So you've been in the industry. You mentioned, you know, your company is about 18 years old and how these devices may have changed over the years. Evolution has been pretty sustainable and exciting, but I'm not sure we actually understand the intricacies of it all. Can you share some of your thoughts about on the evolution of mobile devices with us?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. It's really quite interesting how it's changed in the last 18 plus years. We actually started back in the days, you might remember the Apple Newton, which was Apple's first entry into the mobile device space long before the iPhone was ever around. And just a little bit after that, as I mentioned earlier, Microsoft came out with a form factor called the handheld PC, and it looked almost like a mini laptop. It was a clamshell device that opened up and had a tiny keyboard on it, but it had a touch screen, and that was really where we did our first commercial applications, including eWallet, was for that form factor. In those days, the devices weren't really all that internet connected. If they were, it was extremely slow and was tough to do much with them. But they were very great at organizing information, and they were certainly a lot more portable than laptops, especially laptops of the time. And then slowly over time, the form factor started to get a little different and had a little more power. A couple years after the handheld PC came out, Microsoft released a new product called the Pocket PC, and that started to look a little bit more like a device you could use. And around the same time, you might remember the Palm Pilot, which had had a little keyboard on it and a stylus, and that was basically Palm's offering in that same space. Still, we weren't super internet connected at this point, but the form factor was getting smaller and a little more usable. And then what happened is several years later, companies started taking these same devices that were essentially disconnected and adding cell phone technology to them. It wasn't bolted onto the side, but it was kind of bolted on inside. So they still look like bricks, like a Pocket PC or a Palm, but now they also had the capability to do phone calls as well, and a little bit more internet access. And then, of course, as time progresses, we get into devices that were designed first to be a phone, but still had the other capabilities up until now, where you've got the very modern smartphones, like the iOS based iPhone, and then Android's offerings with their phones, and of course then the tablets too. So really interesting. And then also back in the old days, there really wasn't the same distribution of applications that there is now. Back then, it was really up to individual companies to distribute the apps themselves, or maybe use an independent third-party distributor to distribute applications. Whereas now, as you know, most phones and tablets have access to their own vendor-specific store. iPhone has has the Apple App Store, and Android has Google Play. So that's changed as well. It's been really quite interesting to see. And of course, now these smart devices, smartphones and tablets, have great internet access, and you can do on these devices almost everything that you can do on a full PC, whether it be desktop or laptop.
Absolutely. So would I be dating myself if I said that I still have some of the earlier Palm Pilots in my basement as well as the Kyocera smartphone. Do you remember those?
Well, if you're dating yourself, I am dating myself too, because I know what you're talking about.
So back in the day, so I have 16 years experience working for Verizon Wireless. I started out in the paging industry back in the old alphanumeric pager days, graduated to two-way pagers, made the transition from two-way pagers to the cellular market, and back in the day used to use the Palm Pilot and interface it with the Franklin Covey software to that same Kyocera smartphone. It had the little flip heavy antenna that you pulled out, and had the little dial pad that you could flip down, and then you could access all of the Kyocera smartphone apps, like your contacts, your calendar, your documents, and things like that. So definitely an early adopter of technology.
Absolutely.
So a lot of those are still in my basement because I just can't part with them. People pick them up and they look at them and go, what are these? And it's like, well, it's a really good, personal protection device if you want to hit somebody with it.
Maybe we need to talk MTAM into doing a mobile device museum, and we can both donate products to that.
There you go. Maybe that might even be a good blog to have people write in about the devices that they like and do some kind of a showcase. I like that idea. Good idea. We'll have to talk to Lynn about that.
Yeah.
All right. Back to our podcast information. Let's start talking a little bit about cybersecurity and mobile applications. I understand that this is an area that your firm does a lot of work in. In which industries do you find your customers typically?
Well, that's a great question, and we for us, I'll mostly talk about our e-wallet product because I think it really addresses what you're asking about. And most of our customers actually are consumers that find us either on the web or in the app stores on the various devices, and they've come to us because they've gotten tired of writing all their passwords on a note, post-it note, and sticking it on their monitor, or using passwords that are too easy to guess, and they're concerned about security, or they're realizing, gee, I shouldn't be using the same password on every single website I go to. I should mix it up a little bit. So eWallet kind of helps with that by not only organizing their information, but by generating passwords for people if they want to, and then, of course, storing them. And it also will plug in the username and password when you go to a website. So even though it's generated maybe a complicated 12 or 15-digit password that you couldn't really read, it can paste it right into a website for you, so you don't have to worry about that. But our customers for this kind of thing really come from all over the place. They're consumers, and then companies will come to us mostly because they've used it as a consumer first. When we first started distributing eWallet before the days of the built-in app stores, our applications like eWallet and List Pro and Newsbreak were delivered with devices in the box. So they were either in the ROM on the device, so they were built right in, or they came on a companion CD. But nowadays, people tend to find us either through our website or through the app stores themselves.
Nice. Well, we keep hearing in the news about security breaches and that cyber threats are becoming increasingly more of a concern. What can we do, and what can the industry do to help manage security? And I guess because you have kind of talked a little bit more about the consumer, there's a lot of people running around today that their smartphones are not protected by either a password or a code or anything like that. So if they lost them, all of their information is wide open to somebody else. What can the industry do, and what can we do to help protect against that?
So that's a really interesting question, and we find that there's always this balance that we're all doing between convenience and security, and it it almost seems like, unfortunately, to have, you know, the most security that you want, that sometimes means that things aren't so convenient and vice versa. So what we've tried to do, and specifically with eWallet, is to give users choice. And what that means is, I'll give you a couple examples. One is eWallet, like the devices, many of the devices themselves these days, has the ability to use the fingerprint scanner as an alternative to entering your eWallet password when you want to go and get something out of your digital wallet. And the fingerprint access we really consider a convenience. That's not so much security as it is a convenient way to avoid having to type your password. And some people like it and some people don't. So, for example, someone that has access to your phone, including its passcode, could presumably register their own finger, and then maybe they could have access to your wallet too, which may or may not be a good thing. So we've made it a choice with eWallet where for every wallet you can say, yes, I want this wallet to work with the fingerprint scanner, or no, I don't, and it defaults to no. So users can decide on a wallet-by-wallet basis if they want that feature to work. We've extended that choice to our synchronization as well, where people who tend to use eWallet on a mobile device also have it on their Mac or PC in many cases. And we have a synchronization engine that will keep your passwords up to date and everything else you store in eWallet up to date on both sides. And the most convenient way to do that is by synchronizing through the cloud. And it's fast, and you really don't have to do much. But, you know, your master wallet then is stored in the cloud somewhere, and some people feel that that's an issue for me. I really don't want to store, even though it's encrypted with military-grade encryption, I don't want my information stored in the cloud. So we give them a choice. They can also synchronize directly between their PC and a mobile device using a local Wi-Fi network or something like that, where none of their information is stored in the cloud. And I think for a lot of situations that the industry is facing, in addition to just enhancing security, there may be something like that as well, where either we as users or the industry in general needs to provide a choice of, do we really want to do whatever it is we're trying to do, and do we understand the risks that go along with it?
Well, and that comment leads me to my next question. You know, we see a lot about the Internet of Things, and people, you know, depending on what they really understand, there's so many devices that we've been using that are already considered an Internet of Things, so it's just a new term. But, you know, we hear about baby monitors being hacked, or when you sync your phone, for example, to the system in a rental car, being sure to remove your device, but information being recoverable from those types of devices or your wearable devices being hacked. How do you suggest that purchasers of these devices protect themselves and make certain that what they purchase and attach to their network is secure? Can you talk to that a little bit?
Yeah. That is such an important thing, and it's hard. You know, we get the convenience pretty easily, but we don't necessarily easily get all the background that goes along with it. For example, the car example you raised is great, where you go to get a rental car, and let's say it's got sync in it or something like that, where you can just, you know, hook it up to your iPhone or Android, and all your contacts are in there, so you're wirelessly using your phone in the car now, and that's awesome. But then you go to return the car and you don't wipe that stuff out, maybe there's some information left in the car. And how would a regular consumer even know that that's the case? So I think there's a couple of things that we can do and that companies can do in situations like that. First of all, we as consumers can try to read as much as we can about using these services before we use them, just try to be aware of what the potential situations might be and react accordingly. And I think companies can and will do more in the future to automatically handle this kind of thing. Like, for example, you return a car, you could imagine a scenario where in the future, automatically, when you pull up, you're asked, would you like to delete all your private settings, or maybe it just does it automatically. That would be a great feature, so you don't have to worry as you're hopping onto the plane, oh, man, I forgot to wipe the settings out of the car phone stuff. So I think it's two things at least, consumers becoming more knowledgeable about these different things and asking the right questions, and then companies doing more in the future to help us as consumers so we don't have to worry about this kind of stuff.
Definitely. Education and responsibility do a lot to take us far.
Yes.
Let's circle back to Ilium Software for a minute. We've established that security issues are extremely important to the work that you do with your customers. So I'd like to know, what is your approach to protecting your business customers? And how do you maintain passwords and other information about your customers yourself? And this is kind of a long question, sorry. How do you address customer privacy concerns, obviously, without giving away any of your secrets?
Yeah, that's a good question. And first of all, for a product like eWallet, we don't have any access to any of the information people store in their digital wallet using our eWallet product. If it is stored in the cloud, it's stored in their own personal account on something like Dropbox or iCloud. We have zero access to it. So for that kind of personal information, which people are specifically trying to keep private from the get-go, we have no access to it anyway. But for other things that you might not consider necessarily so private, but we still treat them as private, We do take some steps, and a couple of quick examples would be when people go to the support area in our website and contact us maybe for advice on, how do I get the latest version of eWallet on this platform, they might ask us. When they write to us doing that, we automatically switch over to an encrypted channel using SSL. So even though nothing is really secret, they're just asking us for information, we still encrypt it, keep it private, just because we figure, hey, that's no one else's business. So we'll make sure that only they and us know that they're asking this information. Another example, maybe a little more pertinent, is in many applications we'll use a third-party crash reporting service. So if something goes wrong or something seems odd in an application on a device, it can automatically be reported to a service. And in some cases, then that report can be tied to an individual user. Well, what we've done to protect the user's privacy in that case is two things. One, instead of using their name in what information is sent to the third party with the user's permission, by the way, we use a randomized, it's created on the fly, support identification number. So even if we go and look at that report, we can't associate it to an individual user unless they want us to. And then second, in our applications that do that kind of thing, we always give them a way to completely turn it off. So they're not even prompted for a report to be uploaded. It would never be uploaded in the first place because they've turned it off. So just a couple of things that are maybe in some cases minor, but I think privacy is so important. We try to do everything we can to protect that kind of private information. I know I consider my privacy important. I'm sure you do too. And we'd like to extend that to our customers.
Absolutely. When you were speaking about the no access to, like, the e-wallet information, made me think, are you familiar with the TV show that was out there for a while, Person of Interest, where the gentleman built a computer and then didn't have access to it, but it randomly dialed in to tell him about things happening? I'm not sure you're familiar with that.
No.
Then, Yeah, there was a show. It's called Person of Interest. I don't know if it's still out there. We watched it for the first season or something. And then the encrypting, and even just the telephone conversation that you're having, even, you know, understanding that there might not be anything, you know, that has to be secured, just being prepared for that eventuality. And I think that that speaks to the whole cybersecurity. You have to be prepared. Chances are you aren't going to lose your personal device. Chances are you aren't going to leave your laptop when you're traveling for a business event or something. But knowing that if you do happen to leave your computer, number one, that it's backed up. Number two, that you can use a code, send a signal out, wipe it, so that if somebody finds it, they don't have access to your information, and that's crucial.
Yeah, that's really, really important.
So let's talk about Michigan for a moment. From your perspective, is the Internet of Things and the mobile device industry, are those items going to bring new industries to Michigan? And if so, how can Michigan maximize that opportunity?
Yeah, no, that's really an interesting question. I think there are so many technology opportunities in Michigan, and we just need to continue to make it clear that Michigan is a great place for technology companies, for innovation, and we also need to really support the organizations that every day are pushing that message, like the Mobile Technology Association of Michigan, which is just crucial in getting that message out. Michigan is such a great state. We have wonderful natural resources. We've got great people here. We've got outstanding universities. I mean, in our company's hometown, Ann Arbor, we've got the University of Michigan with just wonderful professors and talent there. And, of course, there's in the state, we've got Michigan State, Wayne State, Grand Valley. We can go on and on about all the wonderful educational institutions there are. Great engineering in the state. I mean, there's really – it's hard to top Michigan. And of course, I have a fondness for Ann Arbor, being from there. But I think we just need to continually push the message that Michigan really is just an outstanding place for technology and for innovation.
I think you said it really well. You know, Ann Arbor, of course, we have such great educational institutions. You mentioned a lot of them. We've got the Automotive 3 sitting over there, so for the connected vehicle space that's coming up, or transportation issues. I mean, there's a wealth of things. So not only can you find opportunities for employment, but also if you want to play, we've got all of the, you know, the fresh water. You had mentioned, you know, some of those other resources. But if you want to do boating or you want to do winter skiing, you know, there's just such a lot that Michigan has to offer. So it's nice to see us on this trajectory of growth.
Yeah, absolutely.
As we close, are there any final thoughts that you'd like to share with our audience about Ilium Software, the mobile wireless industry in Michigan, or about cybersecurity?
You know, I think I would just say that it's often said the one-word definition of self-defense is awareness, and I think that applies to the physical and digital worlds. And we need to be aware of the things that we connect to over the internet and how they may affect our security and privacy. And then I'm just going to add to what you said earlier about being able to remotely wipe a phone. We recommend that. We recommend people with phones and PCs use a good passphrase to lock their device. That's really important. So you've got one level of security just by forcing people to enter a passphrase to use their device. And then not surprisingly, we, of course, recommend people use eWallet to track all their passwords, usernames, and other private information.
Wonderful. It's great information, and I mean, people really need to think about this. So, Ken, I'd like to thank you so much for joining us today and sharing information not only about Ilium Software, but cybersecurity devices and how to design and create information management tools. We didn't talk a whole lot about the development of, but knowing that there are companies out there, such as yours, with expertise to help people do that. Your length of time in the business certainly speaks to your expertise. So thank you very much for sharing that knowledge with us.
Well, Melissa, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Next up, on Friday, April 15th at 1 p.m., we speak with Ken Curry, co-founder of Tangerine Mobile, who's going to join us and discuss the use of real-time location and other sensors to track and optimize performance. The Mobile Technology Association of Michigan is a nonprofit trade association for Michigan's mobile wireless technologies industry. It's the first state-based mobile wireless industry trade association in the U.S. We focus on increasing demand for Michigan-based mobile wireless technology products and services within the state, nationally and internationally, and creating sustainable jobs in Michigan. For more information, please visit our website at gomobilemichigan.org or follow us on Facebook or Twitter at GoMobileMI. Thanks so much for listening, and make it a great week.